Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is Inauguration Day in Liberia as President Weah delivers his final address to the nation.
My fellow Liberians, as I speak to you tonight on the eve of another consequential political transitions in recent history of our beloved nation, I am filled with a profound sense of gratitude and humility.
Some Liberians will tell us their expectations of incoming President Joseph Boakai. Senegal chooses 20 candidates to contest the country's February presidential election. Tensions rise in the Horn of Africa over the Ethiopia-Somaliland port deal.
It seems the Egyptians are reacting against Ethiopia by joining the bandwagon led by Somalia.
And in Eswatini, a commemoration of the anniversary of a pro-democracy leader's assassination. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports and the African Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Vice President Joseph Boakai will be inaugurated today, Monday, as the 25th President of Liberia. Boakai defeated President George Weah in a close November 2023 runoff election. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Representative to the United Nations, is in Monrovia as head of the U.S. delegation. Meanwhile, President Weah delivered his final speech to the nation Sunday night.
My fellow Liberians, as I speak to you tonight on the eve of another consequential political transitions in recent history of our beloved nation, I am filled with a profound sense of gratitude and humility. It has been an honor and a privilege to serve as your president and commander-in-chief for the past 6 years. Together, in 2018, we embarked on a journey to build a united, peaceful, and prosperous Liberia. And I am deeply thankful for the trust and support you have bestowed upon me and my administration during my tenure. As we navigate the complexity of governance, your partnership was instrumental in the development and implementation of policies and programs that aim to bring progress and development to our great nation. Reflecting on the accomplishment of these 6 years, let me tell you that I am proud of what we have achieved together. We have built roads, supported free wires, and free tuition at high schools and public universities, stabilized the macroeconomy, challenges we face in 2018, build hundreds of proper housing units, and achieve on so many fronts that we are able to list here today. However, I acknowledge that there is always room for improvement, and perhaps more could have been done under different circumstances. Regrettably, some of the long-term projects we initiated did not reach completion during my tenure. I am hopeful that the incoming administration will carry the torch forward and bring these initiatives to fruition for the benefit of all Liberians. Fellow compatriots, rumors and misinformation have played a large part in our politics over the last 6 years. It is my hope we as a country will overcome this challenge over the next 6 years. To begin this, we must start with the facts of the transition. I must report to you that we are leaving behind a better economy than we inherited. Today, President-elect Joseph Nyima Boakai will inherit a stronger economy than I inherited. There is a bigger net international reserve position than was handed me in 2018. I inherited $94,999,000 United States dollars in net international reserves. And I am handing over to the next administration a net international reserve position of $222,700,000 United States dollars.
That was outgoing Liberian President George Weah delivering his final speech to the nation Sunday night. Reporter Rita Jolabeduo in Monrovia spoke with some Liberians about their expectations for incoming President Joseph Boakai, who will be inaugurated today, Monday.
The election results shows that the country is certainly divided, and for me, one of my expectations is that the very first engagement of the Boakai-led government should be about reconciling the country. And by reconciling the country means that the people he will appoint in government should have a broad-based representation of all.
The Liberian women are very disappointed. They have experienced a series of broken promises since 2005. So we hope that the government of President Boakai will be able to commit and deliver on its obligations to regional and international instruments and to the Liberian women to promote legal and policy reforms.
The first thing I want for Joseph Boakai to do for us, Joseph Boakai should face the role for us. The road condition is stopping us from going to our homes. Number two, we need jobs. I'm begging him to at least help the college students that are graduating. When they graduate, they will go back and push wheelbarrow. It is not good for us to see our children like that. The last one, let him help us to see about our husband that working there as civil servant. Their salary should be on time.
Those were defeated because of bad governance and corruption. You could see that the corruption was all over the place, and he being a president, he was not speaking to all of these things. So we hopeful that this coming government of Joseph Boakai, we believe in him, and we know that he going to do better. Our people going to get jobs. The civil servant going to get good pay. Our teachers going to be happy. Our nurses going to be happy. These are things that were lacking in the past government.
The thing I really want for it to be improving the country here, yeah? The trust, basically, the people that are working to the trust, they were that real holding good, so they were able to do good work. Our children's point, that they put stop to effort they come in the country here. Yeah? The other thing again, wow, making me to feel bad that they press control, no press control. Everybody get their own press. That Joseph Boakai try to help us.
The expectations of some Liberians about President-elect Joseph Boakai, who is going to be inaugurated today, Monday. In Senegal, 20 candidates have been selected to contest the country's February presidential elections. However, the French news agency AFP reports that the list does not include opposition leader Ousmane Sonko and Karim Wah, the son of former President Abdoulaye Wah. For more on this story, I spoke with Senegalese political analyst Ibrahim Makan.
For Sonko's voters, at least this time we have a kind of decent explanation, if I can put it in that way. Because for the first time, the court tried to, on paper, in a decision to explain why Sonko was not accepted and linking the decision to the Senegalese legislation. Sonko was not accepted simply because he was sentenced by a court. And according to our electoral legislation, a person who is sentenced to a number of days by a court in Senegal cannot participate in election. That was the only major reason that they found about his non-participation. What is also good in the Sonko case, the court finally acknowledged the fact that the attitude of the administration towards Sonko's was not acceptable because they said Sonko file was not completed because of reason that was beyond his capacity. And I think that one is really important to stress because for the first time in our history, the administration illegally refused to hand over a document to a candidate.
That's why Sonko supporters have said all along that they think that this was politically motivated.
Yes, we can say it's politically motivated because the administration did everything to accelerate the proceedings. You know, when it's come to the judiciary in Senegal, you know, it's quite surprising that in less than 1 year, a case went from the lowest court to the Supreme Court in 1 year, while 40% of the people in prison at the moment are there because their cases were not heard by the same judicial system.
Who do you think now can be considered perhaps the front runner?
Well, this election is very, very open. Open in the way that nobody can tell you who will be possibly the true front runner after the 25th of February 2024.
Sonko's party, the Pastel Party, did they nominate another candidate besides Sonko?
In fact, there are three people who can be seen as very close to Sonko. You have Basiru Jomai Fai. You have also a former minister. His name is Abid Fi. And you have an activist, academic, who is also very, very close to Sonko. All these three are really campaigning. And we don't know now who the party or the former party, PASTEF, will formally designate.
Ibrahim Akan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, January 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley's Sports. Tensions have been rising in the Horn of Africa since earlier this month when Ethiopia struck a deal with Somaliland for a port that will give Ethiopia access to the sea. Somaliland is a breakaway region that has declared its independence from Somalia. Mogadishu has ruled out any mediation with Ethiopia unless the deal is annulled. On Sunday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed to both Ethiopia and Somalia to resolve their dispute through dialogue. Also on Sunday, and according to Reuters, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi said his country will not allow any threat to Somalia. For more on these developments, I spoke with Brooke Hailu, political analyst and adjunct political science professor at Addis Ababa University.
As to the position of Egypt, it seems there are factors behind this. Ethiopia and Egypt are rivals in the Horn of Africa, in the Red Sea, as well as in the Gulf of Aden. It seems the Egyptians who withdrew from the Nile Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam negotiation are sort of reacting against Ethiopia by joining the bandwagon led by Somalia. This had complicated things a bit. Historically, also, Ethiopia and Egypt are rivals in the area. And it seems now Egypt is trying to ascertain its position in response to Ethiopia's strength, Ethiopia's economic, military, and political strength, which is being observed right now. As a landlocked country, Ethiopia wants access to the sea. And Ethiopia's request has been addressed by Somaliland, mind you, not by force, not by coercion, not by pressure in Somaliland, but peacefully, based on the mutual interest, the Somaliland government and the Ethiopian government had created a win-win situation. This has some quarters, especially Somalia, are not comfortable with that. By the way, Somalia proper, that's Mogadishu at the capital, has no control whatsoever over Somaliland for the last 33 years. Somaliland had declared its independence for the last 33 years. So that's how I see it. It's a bit complicated, but one has to handle it in a very, very careful way.
That's what I want to ask you, because United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Sunday is urging both Somalia and Ethiopia to settle the dispute through dialogue. Is there anything like dialogue short of going to war over this?
The dialogue part, you know, Ethiopia has responded positively. We have nothing to hide. Let's talk about it. But what complicates the matter is the refusal of the Somalia government in Mogadishu to even talk about it. And they have made a precondition, and the precondition is to annul or to cancel the agreement signed between Somaliland and Ethiopia. So that has complicated the issue.
I guess we can say to be continued until we hear from Ethiopia.
Yes, Mr. James, today there was a statement issued from Al-Kahira, I think from Cairo, by the Egyptian leader and the Somali leader. And you can bet on it that as per the diplomatic procedure, definitely Sunday night, I mean, or by Monday noon, even a very strong response might come from the Ethiopian Ministry of Foreign Affairs as a response to the Egyptian and Somali statement.
Brooke Hailu is a political analyst and adjunct professor, political science professor at Addis Ababa University. He was speaking with us from the capital, Addis Ababa. In Eswatini, the pro-democracy multi-stakeholders forum has been commemorating the anniversary of the assassination of their late leader, Tulani Maseko. Maseko, the then chair of the forum and a human rights lawyer, was killed in his home on January 21, 2023. Cicelo Gumines Zulu is the new chairperson of the Multi-Stakeholders Forum. He tells me the group wants the UN or the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to take the lead in investigating Maseko's assassination.
As you would know, the government of Swaziland has set on the investigation into the assassination of Tulani Maseko, which leaves us in a situation where even now as we speak, we are none the wiser as to pull the trigger that released the bullet that took the life of Mr. Maseko. So we will be therefore hoping to put pressure to bear on the governing regime in Swaziland for it to understand that we will not allow a situation where the killing of Tulani Maseko is just another killing and life goes on as if nothing happened.
I spoke with the spokesperson for the Eswatini government and he indicated that the government is investigating not only Maseko's death, but also the death of other people in Eswatini, suggesting that there were people who were murdered by protesters.
As far as I'm concerned, the government of Swaziland is accused, number one, insofar as all the killings that have taken place in the kingdom from 2021 up to today. It is the government, or it's the governing regime, in fact, that started the killing. It never stopped. It is continuing to kill activists, arbitrary arrests, order of the day, and it continues to violate people's rights, including the banning of protests and therefore not allowing space for people to ventilate and raise their concerns. It is not sticking to the undertakings that it has made, not just to us as the Mass Democratic Movement and to Tulani Maseko in particular, but to members of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, that there will be a dialogue in the Kingdom of Swaziland so that we can then resolve the issues that are still confronting our country. So as far as we are concerned, this government cannot then investigate itself. It is for this reason that any process that is aimed at investigating the crimes that this government has committed has to be a process that is externally led by reputable international institutions.
Cicelo Gomezulu is the chairperson of the Pro-Democracy Multi-Stakeholders Forum of Eswatini. Eswatini government spokesperson Alfio Sumalo tells me that the government did not murder Maseko, but rather he might have been killed by infighting within the pro-democracy movement. He says the investigation continues.
Again, I would want to reiterate, my friend, that the investigations that are being carried out in this country by the National Security Investigative Agencies are not only directed at investigating how Mr. Tulani Maseko died, because Tulani Maseko's case is not being investigated in isolation. It is being investigated in parallel with other many murders and senseless killings which occurred during the same time when Mr. Maseko died. So in as far as to who are responsible amongst those that have already been apprehended by the investigation agencies of the state, some of them have been charged. Some of them are actually right now appearing in court. We don't know if there is any clue in respect to who amongst those are responsible or are linked to Mr. Tulani Maseko's death.
Well, it's been some time now, so how long would the investigation take?
An investigation takes as long as you can find the culprits or linked people that are responsible for the case that you are investigating.
The pro-democracy groups or the multi-stakeholder groups, they are saying that they believe your government was responsible.
You are not completing the narrative if you start it and you stop there. You are conveniently forgetting that even amongst the progressive or multi-stakeholder groups themselves, they are pointing fingers to each other that they are responsible for Mr. Thulane Maseko's murder. So when you start the narrative which you have just kicked in, we have only told your audience half of the story. That is why we are saying as government, we cannot be speculative on this process. Let's allow the due proper investigation to unfold in order to establish as to what happened to Mr. Thulane Maseko.
Althea Zumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, at the Africa Cup of Nations. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the latest update from the Africa Cup of Nations 2023 tournament. The second round of matches in the group stages of the 2023 AFCON were concluded on Sunday. Zambia grabbed a late goal to draw 1-1 with Tanzania in a Group F match at the Laurent Kpoku Stadium in San Pedro on Sunday night. Tanzania had hopes of a first Africa Cup of Nations win after 44 years when it was dashed when 10-man Zambia snatched the late 1-1 Group F draw in San Pedro. The draw saw Chipolopolo remain third on the group standings, and they will book their spot in the round of 16 if they secure a win over Morocco on the 24th of January in what will be their last group stage match. Tanzania, on the other hand, remained at the bottom of the standings, and they can only progress to the knockout phase if they defeat DR Congo also on the 24th and the other results go their way. DR Congo had fought back to hold Morocco to a 1-1 draw in a Group F match played at the Laurent Kpoku Stadium in San Pedro on Sunday afternoon. The draw saw the Leopards of DR Congo remain second in the group standings, and they will book their spot in the round of 16 if they secure a win over Tanzania when the two meet also on the 24th of January. Earlier on Sunday, Morocco and the Democratic Republic of Congo also drew 1-1, leaving all four teams with a chance of qualifying for the knockout stage. Morocco have 4 points, DR Congo and Zambia 2 each, and Tanzania 1 ahead of the final group matches on Wednesday in the Ivory Coast. South Africa Bafana Bafana revived their AFCON campaign with an emphatic 4-0 win over regional rivals Namibia in a Group E match played at the Amadou Gon Coulibaly Stadium in Kahugo on Sunday night. The results see South Africa rise to second place on the log on 3 points, one behind leaders Mali, with Namibia dropping back to third place with 3 points, and Tunisia with just 1 point, rounding out the quartet. And on to Monday's game, Egypt will have to make do without talisman Mohamed Salah in their must-win encounter against Cape Verde in the final Group B match at the 2023 AFCON, with the game set to take place at the Felix Houphouët-Boigny Stadium on Monday. With Equatorial Guinea on the verge of qualifying for the round of 16 in the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations, Isalanga National will take on host Ivory Coast in their final Group A fixture on Monday, January 19th, with the game set to commence at the Olympic Stadium of Ebimpe. Also on Monday, it will be Guinea-Bissau who will play Nigeria as Nigeria seeks to qualify for the next round, while Mozambique will face Ghana in a must-win game for the Black Stars of Ghana. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, January 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.